What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 95 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We are one episode closer to the 100th episode, which should be coming up here in the next month or so. In the meantime, we have a fantastic episode for you tonight. We are finally going to do what we have talked about doing for so long, which is the Gambit episode. We're going to talk all about Gambit strategies, loadouts, whether to go with a fire team or with solo. Spoiler alert, it is with a fire team. But we're going to talk about all that in just a little bit. In the meantime, we've got introductions and we've got a new thing we're going to try out. So first, I'm Mercules, as always, joined tonight by Kit Kutcher. How are you doing tonight, Kit?
Mercules doing fantastic. I'm excited about the new thing. I'm excited also to dedicate an episode to a topic that we have gone off on so many rants and tangents about over the last month, to the point that it's become clear, like people in Discord have said, just get it out of your system. Just do whatever you have to do. Do a four-part episode if that's what it takes. So we're going to do it tonight. I hope it's not going to turn into a four-part episode, but, I'm super psyched to be here and talking about it. How about you?
Man, I'm excited too. I love Gambit, and we've basically done a Gambit episode just in parts of different podcasts. I think it's been 3 weeks in a row that we've talked Gambit. And then there was a while back that we talked Gambit, and like, I love Gambit. Gambit is one of my favorite additions to the Destiny universe. I can't get enough of it. Like, I try to play with a fire team as much as I can, but even when I can't, I just go in solo, and I just absolutely love doing it because I just really love everything about the mode. Like, if I just want to farm adds and try to farm adds as efficiently as possible, I can do that. If I want to try to slay players, I can do that. If I want a nice mix of both, I can do that. If I want to burn bosses, I can do that. Like, it has everything that makes Destiny fun, like combined into a nice little package. So I'm a huge fan of it, and it seems like every time it gets brought up, we just have so much to say about it. So we figured, you know what, let's consolidate it all. Let's talk about it all and let's knock it out, and we'll call this the Gambit episode, and I'm really excited to get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to try to consolidate all the strategies, loadouts, tips, everything that we've kind of placed hidden here and there throughout the podcast so far. Over the last month and a half, and we're going to put them all here, one episode, updated with the experience that we've gained since we've made those initial observations. Although I don't know that a whole lot has changed for most of them. And we're going to try to take into account in this episode as well, the fact that we do know that there are some rule changes coming to Gambit in the near future, shortly after this episode will be released. The catch-up mechanic will be taking a knock back, so it'll become more important than ever to be the first to the primeval. But we'll talk about that in the rest of the episode. And I think first we want to jump in briefly, step aside from Gambit, and share something else that we're looking to do.
Yeah, so we're gonna do this thing. Spoiler alert, I listen to other podcasts. I'm a huge fan of a number of podcasts, but one of the things that I really like that some of the other podcasts do is they try to involve their community in some way every single episode. And one of the things that we thought about doing is we get, iTunes reviews. They come in every once in a while, and usually we talk about them amongst each other, meaning Kutch and I talk about them and we discuss them. Sometimes they have feedback on them. Sometimes they are just a nice message. Sometimes they're super negative and they're not a positive review at all, and they're saying they didn't like something about the podcast, but we've only ever discussed them internally. So one of the things that I thought would be a cool thing to do is if we were to read any reviews that we got, prior to the filming of the episode from the previous week, we would read them out loud. We would say thank you to the person who left the review. We would discuss any feedback that they had that they put on the review, or if it were a negative review, we would discuss what it is that we thought, we could either do to improve upon that, or whether it's something that, look, we're not going to change. Obviously, we don't want to do this at the beginning of every single episode because we don't want you guys to have to skip any introductory stuff to get into the meat and potatoes of what we talk about here, which is Destiny. So we're going to do this at the end of the episode, kind of the same way we do the Patrons Corner and things like that. But for this episode, because it's the first time we're doing it, we did want to start just fresh, get it out in front of you guys. Just want to let you know, if you do leave us a review, which we would very, very much appreciate, because obviously that helps us out immensely. if you leave us a review. And it, you can leave us whatever stars you want. It really doesn't matter. It's just the fact that you wrote something down, that you rated us, that you told us what you liked or what you didn't like. We would be really super, super appreciative. And like I said, we'll read it out and we'll thank you, or at least respond to you in person. But so the first one that I want to read out is a very simple one. It's from Fiddle Minger, and he says, "Love the podcast. 5 stars. Great podcast. Thanks for the help." You're very welcome, Fiddle Minger. We're very happy that we could help you out with that. That one was all the way back in September, but that's where I wanted to start. And then we've got two that are actually from November. So they're very, very recent. The first one is by Tommy Stern. He says, "Great info with some personality. I enjoy the dense amount of info with a conversational banter between friends who you can tell enjoy the game. My only complaint is that it isn't longer and sometimes feels rushed." And that, we totally understand. I'm glad that you enjoy the banter between us, because sometimes we question what it is that we're doing here and whether or not we're just straying way too far off topic. But I'm glad to hear that you enjoy it. You're correct. We both do love the game.
Yep.
You're also correct that sometimes it does feel rushed. We unfortunately have real life that gets in the way. And though I wish that we could sit here and talk for 3 hours every single week or every single night about Destiny, sometimes the time constraints just kill us, and we have to try to get as much info in as we can without, you know, losing what it is that makes us the podcast that we are. And that leads to it being rushed sometimes. And I do apologize for that.
And sometimes we lose 45 minutes of killer audio. And we have 30 minutes left to do the entire hour and a half podcast. And it is what it is.
Yeah. And the timing of this review actually makes me wonder if that was the one that he was talking about when he listened to it, when it was actually rushed, because we had our 2 hour block. We did our prep. We started recording 45 minutes in. We were like, "Oh, this audio is totally corrupted." And sure enough, it was. And then we had to redo the entire podcast, but with only like that half hour window that we had to finish it. So,
yeah. Yeah, boy, we knocked that one out fast. We might have to revisit that topic in the future, because I'm sure that we're going to get some updates to perks and things that are going to change it and make that worth redoing. But for now, yeah, every now and then stuff like that comes up. And unfortunately, you know, while we do enjoy a fantastic benefit in that we're patron supported, the podcasts, you know, financially secure in a way that takes all the pressure off of us, which is phenomenal. And if you see a patron in Discord or out in the wild, say thank you to them, because they make this happen. But unfortunately, we don't do this as a full-time job. And so we do have those limited time blocks to actually get it done before a girlfriend or a wife maybe starts to get impatient that, you know, we're still doing the podcast. Or, you know,
they don't understand. They don't love Destiny the way we do. My girlfriend calls Destiny the mistress. She's like, "Oh, are you spending tonight with the mistress?" And of course, people who don't know what she's talking about hear Destiny and they think that I actually do have
some a mistress
trashily named mistress somewhere. Yeah. But no, just a video game.
Yeah. My wife doesn't have any clever names for Destiny, but she can't help mocking me when I'm playing PvP, and she hears Lord Shax calling and she's just like, shakes her head, walks away.
Speaking of which, did you see the lore that got, I think it was leaked. It was called The Ones Who We've Lost, I believe, that was leaked on Reddit the other day. Oh, spoilers for lore, but not for anything gameplay related, by the way. So just skip over like the next minute if you don't want to hear about it. But it talks about Zavala from hundreds of years in the past, and he falls in love with a human, and he marries the human and settles down with the human, and the human grows old and dies, and he doesn't change at all, right? But initially, when he first like falls in love with the human, he goes out and like he's talking to her in a restaurant, and Lord Shax is like sitting there with a coffee mug in his hand or like a beer in his hand, and he like screams across the courtyard like, "Your plan is working!" And he's just like shouting at Zavala across the courtyard, and everybody stares at him. It was one of his best quotes. It was something like, "This is amazing! Your plan is working!" And I was like, "Oh my god, I love that they take that enthusiasm that Shax has and they just put it through, you know, put it through all the lore that he's found." So it made me super happy to read that. Although it was a very sad story. Every one of those stories was a very sad story. I believe it was the lore for the upcoming The Dawning event, maybe? But The Dawning has never really been like a... Maybe it was something that was cut from Festival of the Lost. I don't really know, but...
Yeah, no, I had missed that. And if you're still listening, still spoilers. I had totally missed that that coming out. So that's phenomenal that they did that. I actually have a download of like almost all of Lord Shaxx's audio. And somebody on Reddit, gosh, I wish I could give them credit, but I can't right now because I wasn't prepared to talk about this. Somebody on Reddit was like getting Lord Shaxx quotes that you would hear on the maternity wing. I was like, one final push and victory is yours. It was just gold. But so somebody provided just a treasure trove of all of Lord Shaxx's audio that I downloaded. My wife works in lactation, which for those of you who are confused by that term is breastfeeding. She's also got a background in birth education, so she knows everything there is to know about babies coming out and what they need to do to survive those early days. And as a consequence, so do I. So at me with your birth related questions, and that'll be fun.
I
But
think you're playing a dangerous game there, Quentin.
I.
I'm not sure you actually want people to at you with their birth-related questions, but
I'm just curious to see if it actually happens. But anyway, so I downloaded this because I was going to make like a playlist for her for work. Because specifically because Shaxx is the only character she specifically mocks. She doesn't know his name, but she's like, who is that? He's so corny.
Shaxx is
So,
not corny. Shaxx is the most motivational character in Destiny. I love it. Which it's funny that you say your girlfriend knows Shaxx. My girlfriend doesn't know any characters, but she knows the tower. Because every time she's like, come on, you gotta get off now. I'm like, hold on, let me go to the tower first. So she knows the tower, and it broke her heart the other day when we were talking about Destiny. She thought she saw someone at the airport with a Destiny helmet, and I was like, no, babe, that's one of the power armor pieces from the new Fallout game that she came out. And I was like, I'm surprised that you thought Destiny when you saw that, though. That's pretty close. That's pretty good. She's like, yeah, I know a lot about Destiny. I know the tower. I was like, oh, babe, the tower got destroyed in Destiny 2. It was very early on. I was like, I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to get hurt because I know that that's what you know about Destiny, but it's gone. It got destroyed. She's like, no. And I was like, it's okay. We got another one, but that first one is gone. She was like, oh, that makes sense because you always say you have to go to the tower. I was like, yeah, it's a different tower, but it's still a tower nonetheless.
That's amazing. If you're still fast forwarding, spoilers are over, you can stop.
In case you've just been listening to our spoilers at double speed as you fast forward. But okay, enough of
Yeah.
that. See, this is why we're going to do this at the end of the podcast and not the beginning because
Exactly.
we've now successfully wasted what I believe to be 15 minutes getting off on a tangent about birthing and the destruction of the tower that has nothing to do with gaming. So one more. This one's from Instigator. He put this on Thursday. He says, super informative, 5 stars. I look forward to this podcast every week. This podcast gives great insight into everything Destiny 2. Well, thank you very much, Instigator. We're super happy that we could do that for you, and that is exactly what we're here for. So I'm glad to hear that that we're succeeding.
Mission accomplished.
All right, cool. So like I said, guys, leave us a review, positive, negative, 1 star, 2 stars, 3 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars. Leave us whatever review you want. And next week at the end of the episode, we will read out the reviews. We'll give you a personal thanks or a personal response, and we'll talk about them. So we really appreciate it. And
Yep.
in a similar vein, some of you know, some of you don't. We have a Discord. And we just did a nice little refresh of the Discord. We changed some channels around. We reorganized some stuff. We're looking into doing a little bit more. I personally have been trying to pop into the Discord as often as possible and really keep check and give a personal hello to every single person that joins. Basically, it's the Destiny Massive Breakdowns Discord. And if you ever want to talk with anyone else, including us, about the episode that you just listened to, we've got a wonderful podcast discussion channel there. We've got a lobby, which is just open to anyone. Anybody can pop in. Anybody can talk about whatever you want there. We don't really mind. We've also got some really great channels. We've got Destiny of Science, where if you're ever trying to test something and you want another pair of eyes on it, or another, you know, 2 dozen pairs of eyes on it, or you want some people to help you test something, or you're wondering if anyone has tested something before, Destiny of Science is a place where I post everything that I'm working on. You know, before it goes out to the general public, I post it there first because it is so nice to have multiple pairs of eyes look at it. Sometimes they point out mistakes, sometimes they just double check the stuff, sometimes they help me test things. when I need to go back. Like shotgun testing, Van Holden, who's in the Discord, is wonderful. And he's also done some reload testing and equip speed testing. And he posted in there, and Mnemonix as well, post a bunch of his stuff in there. So everybody who's, you know, trying to figure anything out or just wants some help doing that, it's a great place to go. We've got Roll Call, where if you ever have any roles you want judged, I know there's a decent amount of people that just send me roles directly on Twitter, and that's totally cool as well. But I can't always get around to it because I am, you know, pretty busy. Like you said, we do have full-time jobs, so I can't always get around to it. If you want an immediate answer, the Roll Call channel is your place, absolutely. You can post any screenshot, any role, any gun, even hypothetical roles in there, and people will talk to you about it. And everyone is super, super knowledgeable. And then we've got community content, where you could post your own videos, your own written guides, anything that you want, anything that you made that you think fits under the Massive Breakdown umbrella. You are more than welcome to post it there. Plus, we got a couple of great off-topic channels. We've got Spicy Brews. We talk about the beers that we like to drink. And that is personally one of my favorite channels. I just love seeing all the different beers that people have from all over the United States, all over the world. And I try to post in there at least once or twice a week, too, whenever I'm drinking something that I think is unique enough to warrant being shown. So I really hope that you guys can, you know, just stop in, even if you don't want to join, even if you just want to check out the lobby and see if it seems like something that you'd like. But yeah, it's a really great place, and I highly recommend anybody who wants to become a member.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we've actually got a permanent invite link on our Twitter. That's at DestinyMBP. Just head to the profile, and there's a link right there. You can just pop in. No invite necessary, but obviously you can feel free to at me or Mercules if you want to for an invite. We'll get you one as soon as we have a free moment to do so. But so that's there, and hop on in. That you reminded me. Actually, I need to drop a pic of my Shiner cheer in there. It's holiday beer season, and there's going to be some good ones to share for sure. But yeah, I think you gave a fantastic summary. I don't really have anything to add other than I love hanging out in Discord. I've met some fantastic players in there. That's actually where I go for my fire teams most of the time now. Whether I'm looking to PvP, PvE, there's a ton of fantastic players in there. Like you said, everybody's super knowledgeable. One of the great things is it's all Guardians who really care about kind of understanding how the game works, very much like-minded. You know, if you're listening to this podcast, if this is the kind of thing that you enjoy, there's a ton of people who feel the exact same way and are fantastic to hang out with. I'd love to say hi and play a few games, specifically a few games of Gambit.
Yeah. And that's a perfect transition because that's what we're going to talk about. So the way we're going to do this Gambit episode, guys, now that we're finally into it, is we're going to treat Gambit like it's a round that's going on right now. Like we're starting the round, right? So there are a couple of parts to Gambit, and we're going to break them down, each one, what your strategy should be, what your loadout should be, how you should play it, how you should play it solo, how you should play it with a fire team, how you should play it if you're winning, how you should play it if you're losing, although... Really, if we can say this right now, how you should play it if you're losing is perfectly. The exact same thing that you should be doing if you're winning, you need to be doing if you're losing. You just need to be doing it better. Right? So the basic parts are you've got initial moat part, which is like the game starts, you run off, you go grab your moats. You got first invasion, you've got middle moat collecting, you've got second invasion, and then immediately following second invasion, you've got a short period of moat collecting, then you basically got the primeval phase, the boss burn. So we're going to be talking about all that, and we'll start right at the beginning, right? You just loaded into a Gambit match. You have no idea what you're doing, but time freezes for you so you can listen to us talk to you. We can tell you what to do. All right, so you just loaded into a Gambit match. You see the first place that all the enemies are spawning. What is it that you do? Kit Kutcha, do you want to start with any suggestions?
I stop emoting. I'm usually trying to sweep up because the Gambit's the Drifter ship is just a mess. But that aside, I immediately swap to my close range weapon, usually a close range primary, and I just sprint straight for the enemies. Now, keep in mind, I'm looking at this playing solo. My strategy may be slightly different in a fire team. But generally playing solo, what I have found is that I can't rely on my teammates to actually run in and collect all the motes. You would think that would be the thing that everyone would do, but I tend to see a ton of motes just laying around. So I usually just go sidearm or SMG, run straight in, start burning through those first enemies as fast as I possibly can. Commentary, feedback.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what most people should be doing. And sometimes I get confused when I see people like running the opposite direction or in their menu.
I think you're totally correct. You've obviously got the one person who starts off totally AFK when he's solo into a match. So let me, whether or not you're running in a fire team or as a solo player, the motes are obviously the number one priority. What I like to do as a solo player is I like to run in, grab 5 motes, deposit immediately, and continually do that unless there is an obvious situation where it is actually going to hurt the team. Like I'm the only person collecting on a spot and no one else is there. And if I go turn in the motes are going to disappear, the ones that I left, right? So for the very first initial wave, I will always 100% of the time, if I'm solo, pick up 5 motes and go deposit immediately.
Yep. First to block. Absolutely.
Because what's going to happen is you could pretty much guarantee out of 4 random players, subtract yourself, there's 3 more. At least one of those dudes is going to be trying to get a bunch of motes. And what the other 2 do doesn't matter. If you just pick up 5, you will get 5. There are enough motes to where if you run in there and aggressively push, like you said, with close range weapons, and you just get up in their face, you're going to get 5 motes. Just get your 5 motes. Don't take 6. Because you don't know what the other Randys are doing. You don't know if one of them has 4. You don't know if one of them has 9. Your first mission should be get 5 motes, get back, turn them in.
Yep.
Because what you want to start doing is you want to get blockers in there, because every blocker that you stack on the other side slows them down by even the tiniest little amount. And that may be a chance for one of your Randys to put 5 in, which may be a chance for one of your Randys to put 10 in, which may be a chance for you to come back with another 5, which may be a chance for you to get your invasion portal up. Right? Second thing, if you're in a fire team, I pray to you, designate a sweeper. And, you know, say you're a 3-man fire team or a 4-man fire team, it doesn't matter, it functions the exact same way. 2 of you or 3 of you, depending on the size of your fire team, need to stay back with longer range weapons like pulse rifles. Pulse rifles are actually exceptional for this. I highly recommend
it.
Specifically Bygones and Inaugural Address. Just kill the enemies and stay far enough away that there is no chance that you can pick up any motes. If you're a 3-man, 2 of them stay all the way back. Don't touch any motes. One of them goes up, tries to get 15 motes. What's going to happen is 90% of the time, the other Randy that you have, if you're a 3-man, will go up there and try to collect motes as well. And then you've got 2 people who are collecting motes. The way it will usually work out is one person will get 15, one person will get 5, they'll both get 10. Somewhere along that, there's usually about 20 motes, give or take, in that first round of the first wave of the first round. There's usually about 20 motes. There could be a little bit more than it. So basically what's going to happen is you designate a sweeper. That person ignores the enemies unless they're directly in their face. Just switch to a shotgun or to, like you said, a sidearm, an SMG, an auto rifle. Switch to something close range, and they just haul ass directly towards the group of enemies. The 2 guys stay in the back with pulse rifles and kill as many enemies as they can, and that sweeper goes and tries to get 15 motes as quickly as they possibly can, ignoring everything else. They don't stop to shoot. They literally just run from moat to moat to moat to moat to moat to moat to moat until they have 15 motes, and then they immediately haul ass back. If you're a 3-man, the other Randy should have gone in and cleaned up. He should maybe have 5, a little bit more than that. If you're a 4-man, you have 1 sweeper, and then you have the secondary sweeper. So once the initial sweeper has 15, or you see the sweeper way on the other side of where that wave spawned, and you realize that they're not going to be able to get these motes, it's their job to pick up the secondary mote drops, right? So if the initial sweeper is full, the secondary sweeper picks up everything else. If the initial sweeper is over on the other side and the motes are blinking, he picks those up. But the way it ends up working out is you should be able to put in at least 2 medium blockers, or a large blocker and a small blocker, almost simultaneously, or one after the other. That is so, so incredibly helpful. Again, that's the fire team method. The solo method is get 5 motes, turn them in, get 5 motes, turn them in, get 5 motes, turn them in. So that's the way I love it. And the reason why I found that to be so effective is because if you're in a fire team, you can actually start putting blockers in. If you go 15, 5, by the time they've cleared the 15 and the 5, the large and the small, unless they had all four people there trying to clear them, you can usually stick another small in and boom, that's an invasion. And now they've got a blocker to deal with and you've invaded, and if you've done it right, they haven't turned in a single moat.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's golden. So refresher for that, weapons you want to be using. If you're one of the sweepers, sidearm, SMG, auto rifle, shoddy, full auto shoddies, Ikolos, Badlander, the rapid fires, perfect paradox, phenomenal guns. Those are absolutely, absolutely phenomenal guns. Personally, that's what I use for my up close and personal stuff. I have used an auto rifle in the past, wasn't a huge fan of it, just didn't feel like it killed fast enough. I've given sidearms a little bit of a shot, but really for me, it's just full auto shotties are the go-to when I'm a sweeper.
So the only reason I sometimes don't default to a shotgun, I tend to be running a close range because I'm almost always solo. I tend to run a close range kinetic and then also a void shotgun or a void fusion or sometimes depending on what I've got that's highlight at the time. I've run void SMG even. I always try to make sure I've got a void weapon in that energy slot that can put out high damage in a short period of time. I prefer a shotgun in that slot. But I do try to save that for the heavier enemies. So all the red bars, I'll just clean up with a kinetic. But if I do run into, a captain or somebody with a shield, then I will swap to that just to clean them up fast and keep moving. But I try to preserve that ammo because I'm thinking, as a solo player, I'm thinking ahead. I can't rely on my team to take down the envoys at the end of this round. So I'm looking in this first wave, I'm thinking 3 waves down the line, I don't want to be short of special when it comes time to drop envoys because I have no idea what the blueberries are going to be doing. So I do try to be very careful about hoarding that. That's me, and it's worked for me. I'd almost always have full special at the end.
Now, I can say this. I run double special ammo finders in a shotgun scavenger or a sniper scavenger. So I run one scavenger for my special, one scavenger for my heavy, one heavy ammo finder, and two special ammo finders. Right? That adds up to the five. So one heavy ammo finder, one heavy ammo scavenger for whatever it is, usually rocket launcher or linear fusion rifle. Two special ammo finders, one special weapon scavenger, either shotgun or sniper rifle or fusion rifle, depending on what I'm doing. Because of that, I'm very rarely low on ammo, and it's super, super useful, and I highly recommend doing it. I know there was some weirdness about the heavy ammo maybe not working, the heavy ammo dropper. I personally haven't noticed it. I consistently run a heavy ammo finder and have never noticed myself getting less heavy ammo. I have not run a heavy ammo finder and have noticed myself getting less heavy ammo. Totally anecdotal, no scientific evidence behind it. I'm just saying that's what I run. Heavy ammo I save exclusively for invasions, boss DPS. Special ammo, it will use special ammo on that initial wave to clean things up because it's so early. I'm fairly confident that in 2 to 3 more waves I'll have full special again, as long as I keep slaying things. Or I will use special ammo to kill an invader if I need to, or if I'm about to freaking die because there's something like right in front of me, right? Like it is always better to waste ammo and survive than it is to die. So I highly recommend paying attention to your ammo perks that you've got on your armor because that can make the difference between having ammo when the envoys come up, having ammo for the primeval burn, and having just a primary and being basically useless, right? So I totally recommend that.
That's a good point. Because if you do have, if you do have a designated Gambit armor set, that is super important. Or if you have a couple of potential kind of armor sets you can use, that it is super important to pay attention to those armor perks. Right now, I don't have something that has really fit. I haven't gotten drops that I've been happy with and kept for Gambit. So I have been I've kind of been running without necessarily having the ideal ammo perks for a lot of my matches the last couple of weeks. And so that is probably affecting my play style. But that's an excellent point. You know, do look at those. If you don't have something that fits with the weapons you want to use, I think it's more important to use weapons that fit what your role is and what you're trying to achieve than it is to worry about the armor perks. But if you once you've got those weapons picked out, if you have the armor perks that go with them, then yeah, obviously that's your step two.
And one of the first things I do once I figure out what my loadout is I try to get armor perks that match it up to where every single perk I have on my armor benefits me and my play style. And so I do have a designated gambit set. I have a designated raid set. I have a designated PvP set. I have a designated comp PvP set, right? Like I have a set for every activity I could go into. And for me, part of the end game is collecting all those sets, thinking, what's the perfect loadout for me? How do I want to use it? And an example of that that I just recently started doing, and it is, oh my God, so much fun. Telesto with Light Reactor and Gambit. Light Reactor gives you a small amount of bonus super energy for fusion rifle kills. And with Telesto, and at this point in time, I was running a fusion rifle scavenger and three special ammo finders. With that, you basically are never out of Telesto ammo. You just always have Telesto ammo. And because of Telesto's effective range, you can pretty much use it like a primary, and it's void, which means you can use it to take down the envoys at the end. So I was getting three supers a round using that.
Dang.
I was not even touching my primary. And I was also using Shards of Galanor, so, I was kind of throwing all in, and I had
Well,
two super mods, so
yeah.
I'm that dick that was throwing all in on my super, but I was literally getting three supers a round of Blade Barrage using it. It was so crazy that I could Blade Barrage the Primeval Envoys, kill some blockers or whatever came out, and then Blade Barrage the Primeval for DPS not 30 seconds after that. It's honestly such a fantastic loadout. I highly recommend it. And Telesto can one burst invaders, even with their overshield. Speaking of which, the next step in the process after that initial clean, and I do want to say, we talked about a lot of close range weapons there. Remember that if you're not the sweeper, if you're sitting back, please use longer range weapons, use pulse rifles. Like I do want to say that because I think we forgot to mention that. But if you're not one of the sweepers when you're in a fire team, use longer range weapons. It doesn't help your sweeper if you're standing up next to him shooting stuff with, an auto rifle and picking up the motes as they drop on accident. That hurts. That helps no one.
Pulse rifles for long range weapons. Like 100%, my recommendation. Like, I mean, I'm fine too if you want to bring a sniper and you want to use a sniper, I guess. But you're gonna run out of ammo for that sniper. So,
It doesn't make sense to be trying to snipe ads. Like nobody
no.
snipes ads. You snipe for a boss DPS or Primeval Envoy damage, and scouts are still just so incredibly weak, which is unfortunate. Like distant relations is okay. Like that precision archetype is okay for Gambit. They're actually probably better there than they are in any other activity. Because they have just long enough range that you can usually take out the invader if the invader doesn't see you. But really, I mean, you should be using an augural address because it's a void pulse rifle, which means you can also use it to take down the shields on the primeval envoys. Or bygones, because bygones can get rampage, outlaw, kill clip, all those fun things. And you could just tear through adds. I have one with Headseeker rampage, and it's just filthy. Speaking of which, I feel like. Because I just said bygones, I feel like we should get this out of the way. So I tested more stuff in Gambit. I will have the article post out tomorrow with video evidence. There is no catch-up mechanic. Like straight up, there is not. I tested multiple weapons, winning, losing, tied, yellow bar, red bar, taking damage, winning, losing, tied. There is no catch-up mechanic. Like you guys are who the people who are pushing this are falling prey to confirmation bias. Like they want to believe something, and so they're saying that it's there. It does not. You do the exact same damage to red bars and to yellow bars, whether you're winning, losing, or tied. You take the exact same damage from red bars or from yellow bars, whether you're winning, losing, or tied. It takes the same amount of damage to kill red bars, whether you're winning, losing, or tied. Like there is not a catch-up mechanic. And, yellow bars shoot faster and are more accurate. That's something that they do, and they take less damage than red bars, and the second and third rounds have more yellow bars. So that may be what you're experiencing, but there is no catch-up mechanic, and I feel like I need to get this out, right? Like, an Acolyte takes 200 damage from a Duke Mark 44 when you are even. It takes 200, and it kills it. It takes 200 damage from a Duke Mark 44 when you are losing, and it kills it. It takes 200 damage from a Duke Mark 44 when you are winning, and it kills it. Right? Like, yeah. It just is the way it is. I tested it on a bunch of different types of enemies. I did all this testing. And I just want to get this out of the way because I know people are going to ask that at some point in time. And I'll make this post on Reddit tomorrow. And I'm sure I'll be told that somehow there was something else that I didn't test. But the fact of the matter is, if it's not any of those things that are causing the catch-up mechanic, then it probably is not there. So yeah. Just wanted to go ahead and get that out of the way. We can move on to the next step now.
All right. So all that to say, you've now banked 25 plus motes, and portal is up. It's time to invade.
And we're assuming that you, because you listened to us, you banked 25 plus motes before the other team.
Yes.
Banked 25 plus motes. So we'll talk about this first. So if you want to invade, Queensbreaker's bow. Just use it. That's it. That's literally all you do. Put on Queensbreakers, go invade, kill the other team, come back. That's how easy it is. I jest, but in reality, it is really, really easy if you have Queensbreakers. It has so much aim assist that you can basically shoot their stomach and it will count as a headshot. You can totally miss the character and it will still register as a headshot. So Queensbreaker's bow, if you don't have that, Crooked Fang, Manowar. I believe the Manowar actually has a fantastic role and stats-wise, like right out of the collections. But linear fusion rifles for an invader are where it's at right now.
I do want to throw in one alternative, and this is only for me playing as a solo player. What I have found just this past week is that if you're not using another exotic, Thunderlord, if you get heavy for Thunderlord, you can invade and still have heavy left over after wiping the enemy team to DPS the boss. It's that ridiculous. And it kills so fast from such long range. And it's so hard for somebody to shoot back at you when you are shooting them. That I honestly found it to be one of the simplest heavies to run as a solo player. It just makes everything easy. I don't even always save it for DPS, because you can also, you know, break the Envoy shield and then just Thunderlord them down. You still have ammo. You don't need a full thing of Thunderlord to kill the boss if your teammates are worth anything at all. So throwing it out there for a solo player, I've really enjoyed Thunderlord the last week or two.
Yeah,
or last week.
And now there's Thunderlord is absolutely a phenomenal weapon to invade with. Now it's a different playstyle. Queensbreaker's bow basically gives you the ability to sit in the far back and just pick people off. Thunderlord's a more, even though it does have fantastic range, it's a more up-in-your-face type weapon.
It is. It's an aggressive play.
Yeah. The reason I don't use it as much is because that doesn't fit my playstyle specifically. Like, I prefer to snipe. You know, I prefer to golden gun, things like that. But what I do want to say is there's three things that you can do when you go over to invade. And people only tend to focus on one of them. People tend to zone in on the guy who has 15 motes, the guy who has the most motes. They tend to zone in on him. And they will do whatever it takes to go hunt down and kill that guy with 15 motes. And that's super valuable. It is incredibly, incredibly valuable to your team to kill the guy who has 15 motes, because those motes are gone.
Yep.
Right? There are two other things you can do. You can just kill anyone. Anyone at all. Because what normally happens is the dude who has 15 motes is going to turtle. He may have a super up. His ally may have a super up. He's probably going to turtle next to one of his allies. He's got a turtle in a far, far corner of the map. And you're probably going to spend a pretty fair amount of time getting over there. And if he is any type of player worth his salt, he's not going to peek. Because he's going to assume that you have either heavy or, you know, a super, something that's going to immediately murder him. So he's going to turtle, which is what you should do as a player with 15 motes. However, if you kill other players, even a player who has zero motes, those respawn timers are not fast. You have now just immensely delayed their ability to pick up motes by killing a player. So I will say, do not solely focus on the person who has 15 motes to the detriment of getting tunnel vision and either getting yourself killed or wasting all your time. When I pop over, I scan. I scan everything. I look at all four players, sometimes three if one of them has just invaded or one of them has died for something else. I look at the player with 15 motes. I say, is he an easy target? If he is, I'm going to kill him. If he's turtling, I say, where's the easy target? There's an easy target. He has two motes. Don't give a shit. He's going to die. They're going to lose those two motes, and then he's going to wait. You know what else you can do? You can collect the opposing team's motes. This is a mechanic that I never, ever see anyone use. And it is so, so valuable. Imagine you get near a wave of enemies that they just supered on, and there's 10, 15 motes laying on the ground. You can collect all of those, and if you die, they're gone. If you come back to your side with those motes, you can turn them in. They're now your motes. You can literally collect the other team's motes. You can not, it can create, if you collect 10 motes, that is a 20 mote swing right there.
Yeah.
You took 10 motes away from them and you got 10 motes extra for your team. On the first invasion, that can be so incredibly valuable, but nobody ever does it. Nobody ever does it. And it's the perfect thing to do if a team of players all turtle. If every single one of them turtles and you don't have a super or you don't have a heavy that you think you can go in there and kill them, but there's motes on the ground, take every single one of those motes. Every single damn one of them. If not, if they're just turtling and there's no motes on the ground and you don't have heavy and you don't have a super, probably shouldn't have invaded if you don't have heavy and you don't have a super. But
yeah.
If they're all turtling, good, just sit there. Literally just sit there. Dance a little bit, emote a little bit. They're wasting 30 seconds now that your team is basically getting free run of collecting and dumping all their motes in. How many blockers do you think they're going to have set up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's for me, when I invade, I can't say that I've really taken advantage of collecting the team's motes, but I also haven't really run into a good opportunity to do that. I've probably picked up one or two when they've been in my path. My usual strategy going in, because I do play more aggressive than you, is I will scan and I will look for where is the group, because my assumption is that the player who has 10 to 15 motes is squirreling away into the nearest hiding place and waiting it out. Because what I do when someone invades and I have 10 or 15 motes is I find a hiding place that has absolutely no sight lines longer than 10 meters. I swap to a shotgun and I wait. And as often as not, if the invader does come hunting for me, because a lot of people do, like you said, they tunnel vision in. And if you've got 15 motes and you're sitting there, they're like, sweet, easy kill. I jump over their head. I shotgun them in the head twice. I punch them and boom, done. There's three more motes for my team. I got an invader kill and I'm banking. And that, you know, it doesn't work every time, but it works often enough that it makes no sense for me to even bother peeking. The only peeking I do is I look for where my teammates are getting killed from, and I make sure that there's no sight lines to me in that direction. I'll even, once I try to figure out too, when the invader gets close, where they are on my radar, which is, you know, something you should be doing since it's PvP at that point. And I'll play hide and seek with them. I'll run in circles around an obstacle, keeping them on the other side of the circle. Just to keep those motes, especially because if they've just run across half the map, they have about 5 seconds to kill me. It's not to my advantage to fight them at that point. All I have to do is stay alive for 5 more seconds. So I assume that the other person is going to do the exact same thing. I look for where's a group of them. Typically that is close to the middle, and I go find a sight line and I start, you know, raining down the thunder. I don't even worry so much about getting that 15 mote person. If they're dumb enough to make a run for it, I'm generally making sure I have a sight line on the center so I can pick them off. I also tend to only invade after my team's got blockers. Invading, if your team has not just dropped in blockers, can be risky. And if you leave that portal sitting, the other team has cleared those blockers. They're probably dumping their motes in. Your ability to get any benefit out of that is going to be limited. You have to make sure the other team is holding motes or that your team has just dropped blockers, or ideally both. Both of those things should be true. Especially solo queuing, that can be rough because most of the time somebody jumps into the portal the second it opens.
Yeah.
And then dies.
Which, you know, it's better to jump into the portal the second it opens than it is to wait so long that they invade you first, right?
Yeah.
Like, but the thing is, you really need to have, you know, your hierarchy should be heavy ammo first, a super, and then special ammo. If you don't have any of those three things, please don't invade, because you're probably just going to waste the invasion. Secondarily, let's say you are not the one who's invading. Like Kutch said, you should put in a blocker immediately.
Yeah.
Like, we always try to time it where we just dropped in a small blocker and invaded at the same time. And when we're on a fire team, we're talking. It's like, who has heavy right now? Who has heavy? You've got heavy? All right, I'm putting in a small blocker. Come back with me. And I'll go put in a small blocker, and he'll jump through the portal at the exact same time. So that way, we know that they're probably going to be gathered around the small blocker, trying to clear it so they can put their motes in, and then we'll just try to stack small blockers if we can, or put in a large blocker, or whatever it is. But if you weren't the one who invaded, try to put in a blocker as soon as possible, you know, after he went through, or right before he goes through.
Yeah,
it is so helpful to the invader to have a blocker over there. Now, let's say your invader's gone. You just put in a blocker, or your teammate just put in a blocker, and their invader comes through. Personally, to me, I think snipers are the best anti, you know, invader weapon. But there are a couple of tips that you can use. Now, if you have 15 motes, we already talked about this. Basically, turtle. Turtle, turtle, turtle. That's what you need to do. Find a place that doesn't have any long sight lines and sit behind it. They obviously know where you are. If you peek, they're just going to shoot you, probably with a Queensbreaker's bow, maybe with a Thunderlord. They might try to super you. What I usually like to do is find one of my teammates, hopefully in an area devoid of adds, because the adds will annihilate you if you're sitting there, and it makes it very hard to dodge adds when you can't step in any long sight lines.
Yeah.
So if you can, find an area that's devoid of adds. That's probably the most important thing. Second most important thing is hopefully there's a teammate there as well who can watch your other back, or, you know, the other angle, whichever way your back's turned, he can watch it. And third, just don't peek. I pray to you, don't peek. It's 30 seconds. Keep an eye on your radar. If there's no ads around, you should very easily be able to tell when the invader is coming up to you. Maybe you could play Ring Around the Rosie with them, depending on the spot you're in. But if you have 15 motes and that invader comes through, don't try to rush through it, because you will get killed and you will lose those 15 motes. Turtle and turtle hard.
Yep.
As far away from the invader as you possibly can. Hopefully no adds, hopefully near a teammate. That's the best bet. However, if you don't have a lot of motes, say you just put your motes in, I immediately like to, as soon as I start seeing that they're about to hit an invader, like, oh, they've got enough for an invader, I try to move to one of the edges of the map. The reason why, there's three spots that an invader can spawn. You know, left, top, or right. Three spots. Go to one of those three spots, so that when the invader comes through, you immediately know if he's there or not. If he's there, engage him. If he's not, this is something that I've noticed. Invaders have a limited field of view, especially on console. If you are outside of their field of view, they don't see your name tag. They will see the people in front of their field of view, but they actually have to make a concerted effort to turn left and turn right and locate the fourth person, which a lot of invaders don't do. They just zone in on the people who start off in their field of view. Now, if you are all the way over on the left side, the only way you're going to be in the invader's field of view is if they're all the way over on the right side, and you're the farthest person away from them. They're not going to pay any attention to you. If they spawn on the left side, you're going to be behind them. If they spawn on top, they're going to be facing down. You're going to be out of their field of view to their right. So you always want to try to go to one of those places, one of those spawn places. I usually do left or right, not center, depending on the map. The next thing that I do is, if they didn't spawn directly in front of me, I take one of the portals. I take the portal under the drill. I take the portal up in the red room. If it's the Legion's Folly.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, the Kell's Grave map, if it's Kell's Grave, the launchers can be dangerous, because everybody hears you take a launcher and everybody can see you take a launcher.
Yeah.
It can be dangerous, but it's still super, super useful to get from one side to the other. If it's the Cathedral of Scars, those are the best portals. Those are the absolute best portals. You can get from left side or right side up to middle immediately, and you'll be right next to where they spawn. And then you could just run right all the way around. And the invaders never think to check the portals. Never, ever, ever. They can see you on the left side, and you can suddenly disappear, and they won't even question it. And they don't realize that, hey, I just saw you over there on the right side and I took a portal from left to right and now I'm right behind you. Or, hey, I was over on the left side, didn't see you there. I took a portal from left to mid. Now I'm right next to you. Those portals are so deadly and they allowed you to close distance so quickly to get up to invaders, and the invaders almost never pay attention to them. So I highly recommend doing that. If you're not going to sit back and snipe them, or if you don't locate them right away, take a portal. Because it changes your position, which makes it harder for the invader to kill you, especially if they're already targeting you. And it makes it more likely you're going to close in on the invader. Like, if you don't have 15 motes, you should be pressing the invader. You should be trying to kill the invader. Like, you need to make that invader's job hard and kick them back off of your side so the people who do have motes on your team can deposit those as quickly as possible.